fundamental affirmations of Western society are all matters of faith, and it is an historical fact that the faith in which they were grounded and from which they derived their deepest strength has been the Christian faith. It was as children of God that men received their title to sovereign, inalienable rights. It was in the will of God that they saw enshrined the laws and the rights which no government might transgress. It may be possible to believe that the rededication of the Western world to its old ideals can come about without a recovery of its ancient faith. But the only lesson that history gives us is that Christianity and democracy grew up so closely intertwined that the languishing of one way may outweigh the failure and the decadence of the other. What she, in effect, is telling us is that it was Christianity that gave us the concept that we are children of God. If we are children of God, then we share in his divinity, and therefore we have the divine right to select our rulers and to make our laws. It's no longer just the divine right of kings. But the practical institutions through which we exercise this God-given privilege is democracy, because through the franchise which we have in our institution of democracy, we have the machinery by which we can express this power. It is the way in which we can give voice to our responsibility, discharge our responsibility. Well, what has happened in the United States, and one of the reasons we find ourselves at the present time with no leadership adequate to the present situation, is because we have for too long neglected our democratic institutions. You all know the figures. In our last presidential election, only 52% of our people took advantage of the privilege of voting, privilege which they have. But the significant thing is that in the primary election, which is the real important election, only about one-third of the people voted. That means that the other two-thirds of our people have accepted, in effect, the condition that prevails under communism in Russia, where the people don't have a vote, and where a certain group of people have imposed themselves, self-appointed rulers, of the people, and keep themselves in absolute power. And we have almost that situation in many of our large cities here in this country and other places too, because without the vote of the big bulk of the citizens, it's possible for the political organizations to put themselves into a position where they can carry the primary elections by using not only their employees, but the people who are receiving political favors from the government. And they are the ones that get out and work, and the good citizens stay away from the polls. And if we neglect our democracy, our Christianity will go down with it, because if we continue in this way, ultimately we can see the tide of communism moving around the world, and when communism once moves in, the Christian institutions are the first things that they close up. So we can recognize that to protect our freedom to worship, our freedom as human beings, the concept of freedom that our forefathers came over here and struggled against the wilderness and fought for. We have got to recognize the responsibility that we have to make our democratic institutions work. But it isn't that alone. It's the fact that we've got to recognize that as we face up to these problems in the world, we have got to think of the other side of our Christianity. We've got to develop a stronger Christian conscience, a conscience that will cause the people to rise up in a great mass and protest if ever again we try to make a peace that is a peace of vengeance. The thing that ought to be indelibly impressed on our minds is the fact that we have won two wars, but we have lost two peaces. And today we are not talking anything about how to achieve peace or why we failed a peace. We're only talking again about war. But we failed in World War I to achieve the peace afterwards for two things. One, the United States asked itself, are we our brother's keeper? And we decided we were not our brother's keeper as far as Germany was concerned. She was a European brother. So we would let the Europeans impose the peace, and they imposed a peace of vengeance. You can have peace or you can have vengeance, but you can't have both. If you give out love, you will get love back. If you give out hate, you will get hate back. And then we had World War II because we produced World War II by the things that we did following World War I. And then we come after World War II to the peace again. This time the United States stayed in as far as Europe was concerned. But a lot of people are now asking themselves about Asia, are we our brother's keeper? Kai's Beach write that the United States had no plan for Asia. We were willing to let right off a billion people, let them starve if they wanted to, because we said we are not our brother's keeper. And again, if we are going to deal with these problems in the world, there's got to be some leadership. These people are all looking for leadership. They're all looking for help. They're not able to do it by themselves. They're asking for that leadership. The United States is only going to rise to that point. They are only going to make the sacrifices, which need not be too great. It can be a pleasure. It can be one of the greatest satisfactions that this nation had ever do to be able to go out and bring order out of the chaos in this world and to bring happiness to these people that have never known. But we've got to realize that that is our main purpose in life. And until we come to that point, then we cannot say that we have reversed the trend and that we are moving in the direction of achieving the peace which we want. May I close just with a quotation from David Lawrence, the editor of United States News. Quite often he writes an editorial on the back page. I don't often read the news, but I happened to pick this up on the train, and the title caught, the editorial caught my eye. We can win if. We can win, he says, we can prevent the big war, but it will take resoluteness. And resoluteness means moral fiber, not craven surrender to materialism. We are ready to do battle on the moral, we are less ready to do battle on the moral front than on the military front. We can win, but only when we build up the moral courage that comes from a sincere desire to make sacrifices for the cause of human freedom everywhere that it is gravely challenged. We are our brother's keeper.